Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news ad free. That's amazon.com/news ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey, everyone. Just before we start the show, I wanted to take a second to say a few words about our very kind sponsors. 100 Resilient Cities is a part of the Rockefeller Foundation, which you'll probably know is one of the world's largest charitable endowments. 100 Resilient Cities is focused on helping cities around the world become more resilient to the social, physical and economic challenges of the 21st century. They're doing some excellent projects in terms of, you know, environmental sustainability, in terms of economic sustainability, and just in terms of, you know, making life generally better for everyone in cities from Manchester to Miami, to Melbourne, to Montevideo. You can find out lots more, including reading up on some of those fantastic projects, at their website, which is 100resilientcities.org. Anyway, now on with the show.
This is a Manhattan-bound B Express train. The next stop is Grand Street.
Mind the gap.
Hello, I'm John Ellidge, and this is Skyline's The City Metric Podcast. You know, I sometimes, in my darker moments, worry that the kind of platonic, ideal form of an episode of Skylines would just be me apologising for the sound quality for, like, you know, 20, 25 minutes. And then we never get to actually talking about cities at all. Anyway, we'll talk about that in a second. Before we get to that, though, I'll give you this sort of background. A few months ago, we did an episode with my colleague Pauline Bock and my friend, the journalist Marie Leconte, about cities in their native France, how the French economy works, how French government works, and kind of where the different cities fit into the French national picture. And that seemed to go down pretty well. And so I've been kind of trying to think of, you know, who else is there I can kind of drag in to talk about a country where perhaps we're not as familiar with the urban geography as we should be. And I realised that our friends and partners at the Centre for Cities have not one but two Italian researchers working on their staff, helpfully enough, from different ends of that great country. So I thought, you know, let's try the same trick again. You're going to hear a fantastic conversation now, full of interesting stuff, but there are some minor technical problems, and, you know, for once the technical problems are not my own incompetence, which they normally are. It's purely that, you know, we're in a room next to a courtyard where there was some building work going on. It's just unfortunate. It was the only place and time we could do that recording, and it is in places rather more audible than I hoped it would be. But it's still a very fine conversation, and, you know, if you've been bearing with us this long, you'll probably be used to the fact that we're not like 99% invisible. We're not one of the best produced podcasts out there. We are a little bit scrappy, and if not exactly proud of it, then, you know, I'm not entirely ashamed of it either. So anyway, let's roll the tape. I'm here in the offices of the Centre for Cities think tank in London's fashionable London Bridge District. There's some slightly noisy building work going on outside, which is tragically inevitable, but we're hoping they'll keep quiet for us. Anyway, I'm here with some very fine and clever people who are going to tell me all about Italy. Can I ask you to introduce yourself?
Hi, I'm Elena Magrini. I'm a researcher here at the Centre for Cities. I'm from Italy, from Bergamo, so near Milan,
so
in the north.
The north. And we also have...
And I'm Gabriele Piazza. I'm a researcher at the Centre for Cities, and I'm from Palermo in Italy.
Which is way down south in Sicily,
That's right?
That's right,
yes. It's the main city in Sicily, yeah.
So, okay, the thing that I find quite interesting about Italy is, like Britain, Italy has a north-south divide. But it's kind of the other way up. The north is the rich bit, the south is the less prosperous bit. Is that a fair assessment?
Yes, that's the south has been historically poorer than the north. The latest statistics say the GDP per capita is 44% lower than the centre north. And there's been the case since unification.
Yeah. That's correct, 44% less, so it's not that's not much over half the level of
productivity. Yeah.
That's crazy. That's probably bigger than England's one, isn't it?
Yeah, we compared to, so the northern Italy is much bigger than the greater southeast, so, and the Mezzogiorno, which is another name for southern Italy, is much bigger than the north, so we compare to kind of big regions.
And one of the differences is also that here you got London is with the massive city and is the main driver of economic growth, or some people would say, whereas in Italy we don't have one city that is driving everything, it's more this regional divide.
That's okay, that's an interesting place to start, really, is like, so Italy only unified in what, 1861?
That's correct, good knowledge.
I know my stuff. But I also think the amazing thing about Italian unification is, like, you know, Garibaldi sort of marches up the country of an army, unifying it, and then, like, doesn't want to be a dictator. He's like, right, I'm done, I'm off home. Thanks, lads. Right. Absolutely fantastic. Anyway, obviously one of the problems we have in this country is that London dominates everything. But Italy was, like, lots and lots of different countries as recently as 150 years ago. Do you think that has kind of enabled all the cities to retain their own sort of separate identities and power bases? Has that been important?
Yeah, but I think it's more, rather than a city point of view, it's a regional, as you said, because kind of the regions that we have at the moment, we have 20 regions, they correspond to the kind of old kingdoms that we had before unifications, and they stay the same. And some of them, particularly those at the borders, they kind of kept their autonomy and independence, and it's reflecting the current political system at the local level. So you go Sicily, Sardinia, Trentino, Valle d'Aosta, is there any other?
Trieste,
yeah. Yes. Yeah. They've got more powers than the others because of their particular political, different political identity and cultural identity.
Yeah, and also you see very much it also in the language, and in different regions you've got different dialects there, and each region has a strong cultural identity that's different from every other region. That's also in terms of food, but it's a range of things. Yeah.
So give me a couple of examples. Like, what does, if I say Tuscany, what does Tuscany mean?
Well, right. Tuscany is where the Italian language is from, isn't it? It's like
it was from Sicily.
It used to be like a very important, a long time ago, it was one of the most, how you say, flourish. Regions of Italy, but it wasn't the only one, because of course then there was other kingdoms, and you had Venice, for example, being also important, Genoa being important, Naples being important.
So how about I don't know, the Veneto, it's the Venice region, right? Like, what does that, where does that kind of fit into the national picture? If I say Venice, what's the stereotype? Let's go with that.
Lots of tourists. Lots of tourists, then?
Yeah, well, if you think about the tourists, you got all the new legislation about trying to manage the cost of tourism and the number of tourists coming to the city. So that's, I think, one of the biggest stereotypes you just connect Venice with. Tourism, yeah. Also, yeah, they got the Doge a long time ago. They had this new, kind of like a mayor right now. That was like the chief of the small kingdom. Yeah.
But Doge meant the Duke, didn't it? So kind of, I think that's the English equivalent.
Yeah, kind of. Yeah, I think so.
Okay. Let's get back to the north-south divides thing. Like, what impact does that have on Italian politics? Like, that's kind of quite a big factor, isn't it?
It is, yeah. We saw that in the recent election. So you had the south, where the Five Star Movement got almost 0.5% of the votes, whereas in the north, it was the centre-right that's got the biggest share of votes. We got the Northern League, now the League, has changed its name.
I didn't realise that.
Yeah. It was a PR move, and it worked quite well.
They're trying to appeal to regions outside of
them. Yeah. Right? Yeah, it worked quite well. Yeah, so you've got this divide, and then you got the centre, historically had the was more centre-left, but actually they lost ground in the recent elections. So you have this kind of north-south divide that's reflected in politics and has been the case for many decades, although now we had a different kind of party system that has emerged from the most recent elections.
Yeah, the left only kept Tuscany, I think. Tuscany and Trentino. So, yeah, Tuscany is the only left region left in terms of votes.
Yeah, but when we look at cities, actually it's different because it's they've been historically centre-left, apart from a few in the north.
Lega Nord is basically a separatist party from Northern Italy, right?
It used to be.
Is it shifted? Is it not that anymore?
Yeah, well, they were born on this principle of wanting a federalist country in which the North would retain more powers and wouldn't give... The assumption was, we raise a lot of taxes in the North, we don't want to spend them just in the South, we want to retain more of this money to make our economy grow bigger. But now, as Gabriele said earlier, they changed their name, they're not the Lega Nord anymore, they're just the League, and they protect the interest of all Italians. And I think the shift is also related to some of the cultural changes in Italy, because in the past you had this difference in between the North and the South, with a lot of migrants from the South moving to the North, that many people didn't like it, and so part of the reason for federalism was also related to this, but now these patterns have shifted and there is not as much as migration, or that it's not perceived in the same negative ways, so people moving from the North to the South of Italy, and now they change and they want to appeal also to the whole country and not just the North.
So can I just clarify, it was never like a full-on independence movement? It wasn't like the SNP or the Catalan? It was about fewer financial transfers within Italy rather than breaking away, is that...?
I think within the party, of course, you had some more extremists that argued for independence, but then the more they became institutionalized and they want to make political gains, they shifted to a more federalism.
Yeah, and I think a while ago they were talking about Veneto independence or Lombardy independence, but come on, like these regions, they're very wealthy regions, but... They're kind of small in scale too, so.
I mean, it worked pretty well until the mid 19th century, didn't it? So,
yeah.
Why not again?
Why not again? Yeah.
So how did this go down in the South? Like, how do people feel about the fact that it's just the entire political party saying we want to stop giving them money, basically?
Well, I think, funny enough, yet there's some kind of independentist movement in the South as well. So in Sicily, a few years ago, the party that won they got the president of the region was the Movement for Autonomy of Sicily. They want more independence, but that's quite funny because Sicily has got kind of all powers that a region could have. So they've got kind of fiscal autonomy, but it's not really fiscal autonomy because they keep the taxes, but they don't raise them enough. So they need a top up from the central government. So in a way, in the past, I think the Northern League was seen as kind of racist towards the South, but now it's been a shift because with Salvini, it kind of changed the rhetoric and they're no longer seen as racist. But on the other hand, people in the South are aware that they need fiscal support from the central government because the economy is not doing well.
I mean, we're talking about the North and the South. Where's the line? Is there a sort of middle bit that's not in either region?
Targable. We got different opinions.
Okay, well, cool, this is fun. Come on, let's have an argument. Okay, so, Eleanor, where do you think the line is?
Well,
anything below Milan.
Well, it depends. Most people, I think, would agree the line is below Rome, right? So below Rome is the South. For some other people, Rome is already the South. And for other people, the line is at the level of Bologna, so Emilia-Romagna, so before the Apennines. So everything below the mountains is South. But, I mean...
That's quite a long way north, isn't it? That's basically the entire sort of peninsula, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Because it's funny, because when we talk about the North and South divide, also in terms of the political patterns now, five-star movements got votes pretty much everywhere in the peninsulas rather than so below the Apennines, and not just below Rome. So
Rome is the South, that's what you're saying?
No, I'm just saying that the South we consider economically maybe shifting, I don't know.
Can you see this? So we have just had these two different populist parties, right?
Yeah.
Like, are they presenting different visions? Like, and how do their policies differ?
They do differ. So, I mean, one of the arguments that you come across if you read the Italian media is that one party, so the Northern League, for example, the main issue was migration and support for small and medium businesses. That's why the main policies was a flat tax for all businesses and families. Mm-hmm. Whereas in the South, whereas the five-star movement, the main policy was support for people out of work, a fight against corruptions, and so on and so forth. And the main policy was the basic income And that's one of the reasons probably why it went down quite well in the south, and the other one went down well in the north.
So I mean, it sounds like just two different visions of populism. There's kind of a left-wing populism, which is about supporting people in the area that's struggling, perhaps. And there's a sort of more right-wing populism where it's about, like, you know, cutting taxes and so on. Is that a fair assessment, Anna?
I think it's pretty much that, or at least that was in principle. I think the Five Stars movement doesn't have a party, so they don't say they're left or they're right. They just want to say they're different from the old political establishment. But for some of the policies, for example, the basic income, you would think that they tend more to the left. And yet again, they have went on collision with the right. So
bring us up to speed. Forgive me, I've not. I don't claim to understand Italian politics. It's like Italy now does have a government.
Which, yes, we do. We have.
It's coalition, right?
What's a coalition government with Conte as the prime minister. Adam, yeah. And two vice prime ministers, which are Di Maio and Salvini, so the leader of both political parties. And both of them now got the ministers, the ministry they basically had the political campaign on. So Di Maio as the Ministry for Economic Development and Labour Policies, Labour Market Policies.
So which party is that?
The Five Stars Movement. Whereas Salvini got the Home Office department, and so all the issues related to migration, for example, is in charge of them.
So you have these two different set of populists in government at the same time.
Yeah.
How is that going to work, do we think?
Like, it's been there only for 9 days or 10.
So far. Is that quite a long time?
for an Italian government, yeah, 9 days.
Yeah.
Okay, actually, no, this is a question I'm quite curious about, is like Italy does tend to, like, Italian governments often don't last that long, and one of the reasons like Berlusconi made such an impact is because he was actually around for quite a while as Italian prime ministers go, right? Why is the instability? Is it the kind of the regional stuff we already talked about, or is it the electoral system, or like why don't governments last?
I think it has to do with the electoral system and the party system. So you've got lots of small parties, at least so much more in the past, where so you have to create a coalition between different small parties, and one small party might have a huge power over the future of the government, and then might pull out and the government collapse. So you had this issue with the Northern League, with Berlusconi. You had the same issue with the Rifondazione Comunista when Prodi was in power, and other small parties, even five seats, or some governments have got five seats majority. Or and then also the interesting part is that members of the parliament switch sides, which is something that you don't see very much in other in other countries.
So they get elected on one party ticket and then switch to another party.
Yeah, they change their ideological view of the world in a few days.
Plus, I think the two chambers, so the Senate and the Parliament, are elected in different ways. So the way the seats are assigned are different from the Senate and the Parliament. So maybe this creates also a bit of instability, because if you got one chamber that's more towards one party than the other.
I'm just thinking, when you're talking about like being governments being dependent on the support of small parties, I was just wondering if there might be any lessons here for Theresa May. Okay, so like back to the sort of north-south divide stuff. Sorry, I do keep coming back to this because I find it fascinating. Why is the north so much richer than the south? Is there any sort of accepted narrative about why this happened, or is it just it always has been?
Well, that's one of the difficult questions. You could ask the same thing about the UK. I think, I mean, most has to do with the historical developments in the past. So when they unified, the North was already very industrialized and just kept growing since then, whereas the South kind of tried to...
Yeah, and also maybe even before unification, you had these different European countries having influence on Italy. So, for example... Southern Italy was mostly ruled by the Spanish.
It's part of the Habsburg Empire, wasn't it?
Yeah. Whereas most of the north was either under France or the Austro-Hungaric Empire. So maybe there's something cultural in there, these two empires being maybe more, I don't know, economically successful or with different economic strategies. I'm just guessing.
It is also sort of interesting how this stuff persists. I kind of wonder whether some of it is just purely geography. It is kind of noticeable that both in Britain and in Italy, it's the slightly more peripheral region that struggles. Like, both southern England and northern Italy are kind of closer to the heart of Europe. So I wonder if there is just kind of a geography is destiny thing going on here.
Also, I'm Putnam wrote the book on how, for example, there's a different level of trust, different kind of culture when it comes to business. So, for example, in the south, there's not much trust among citizens, and that's not very good for business. Whereas in the north, there's a lot of trust among citizens, and that's better for businesses. And that's kind of going back to what Elena said, maybe a cultural thing coming from the Spanish and then coming from the north. Mm. But
if you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to 1 full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full, important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am, but Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Where I'm slightly socially awkward about asking this, but where does the mafia fit in? is that also a factor in? I mean, it's probably both sort of the cause and effect of the South's poverty, but the mafia is a southern Italian phenomenon, right?
That's right. Although it has expanded,
that's true.
Growing industry,
exporting its business across Italy. Yeah, I mean, again, it's going back to this kind of level of trust. It's a phenomenon of the South. So Palermo has been historically the capital of the mafia. Organized crime is more, I think, now based in Napoli and Campania, those regions there. And again, I think the fact there is not much employment gives kind of ground to organized crime.
It's just sort of plugging a gap, basically.
Yeah.
But that presumably also has kind of, I mean, it just struck me when you were talking about some different levels of social trust. I just kind of wondered if that was a factor here, that like the South has had this kind of long-running problem.
Yeah, no, because I remember at the time of unification, I think that's where the mafia came in the sense that when Garibaldi went down and unified the country, they didn't they just merely applied the same legislations to the rest of the country, the one that were in the north. They just applied them everywhere, and they weren't fit for the south. And so probably people seeked for protection in the big landowners, and so that's maybe how it started.
Yeah, no, that's interesting. More sort of the feudal approach to these things, where you're kind of dependent on, sort of like individual people rather than legal structures. Because the unification of Italy was basically like Piedmont just grew, right? It just kind of conquered all the rest rather than, this is meant to be a cities podcast. If we haven't really said, let's talk about local government. So like, how powerful are Italian cities in terms of setting their own their own agenda, their own policies.
We're definitely more decentralized than the UK. We've got a very complicated, sophisticated system, depends how you want to look at it. We got 20 regions, and then below the regions, we got 110 provinces. Not all provinces are the same. We've got 14 city regions, which are kind of the same as the combined authorities here. And below them, we've got municipalities, which is the same here. All of them elected by at different times, all with different powers. It's not clear which powers regions have. They have all the powers the government, the national government, doesn't have control over. This mostly means schools, something related to transport, social services,
infrastructure.
But the example we often come back to here is like, you know, it's always struck me as absurd that if an English city like Leeds wanted to build a tram network, the decision over whether it gets to do that is not taken in Leeds, it is taken in London, in Whitehall, by people who may never have been to Leeds. Am I right in thinking that, like in Italy, like the cities kind of get to decide this stuff themselves to an extent?
I think they definitely get more powers than Leeds. No, 100%.
It depends on on the region in which the city is located. Yeah. So, for example, in regions like Sardinia or Sicily, where actually the regions are kind of almost
autonomous,
I guess cities have much more power. So, for example, we had the tram lines in Sicily, in Palermo, and was a decision of the mayor together with the region. So they've got more power than other places, I guess, for example, in Genoa or Turin. But that's very much depends on the regions in which they're located.
This sounds like quite a complicated system.
It is.
How did it end up so complicated?
I think it's because it came from the bottom up rather than top down. So they were already there. The municipalities were there from Napoleon times. So with the French system, and then on top of the layer, there were the different kingdoms. So they are now the regions, and then you got the national government.
And then after the republic, so after the World War II, kind of some regions were asking for more independence, and then you had these other the other system on top of that that granted autonomy to these regions on the border, and that added more complexity to all this.
So it's just kind of, it's a developed organically. No one sat down and planned this system.
No,
Has it evolved much in recent years?
The number of provinces have went down, and they introduced in 2015 the city regions, which we didn't have before. I don't think there's much of this conversation at the moment in Italy. They're just trying to get a government running. But I think one of the reason why we got less provinces now than a few years ago, it was precisely to reduce some of the bureaucracies related to having all these layers.
Yeah, and from what I understand, it's more discussion that it's been held in the north rather than the south. Yes. In terms of giving more powers to regional unities or mayors.
There has been a recent referendum, I think last year, in Veneto and Lombardy, I think, about having more powers or retaining some fiscal powers.
Does it sort of fit into the same as the League of North debate we're talking about, where it's basically just the North wants fewer fiscal transfers to the South, effectively?
I think it started from there, and both these regions have got the rulers of these regions, because of course we got elections for a mayor for the region. A president for the region. They were there both from the League, and so I think the movement started for them, but I remember all parties signed the referendum request, so it went cross-party at the end.
Again, I think it's much more in the north than in the south. I mean the debate in Italy, in particular in the south, has been dominated by the lack of jobs and how the economy is doing very poorly, rather than how to change the local political system.
And they're very dependable on the national government for money, so I don't think they would press for more.
And then we should be wrapping up quite soon, so I want to move to let's talk about some silly stereotypes.
Finally.
I remember years ago, I think during, it must have been more than 10 years ago when Berlusconi was still in power, wasn't there a proposal to build a bridge from Sicily to the mainland?
Yes, there were.
Like big bridges. Whatever happened to that? They didn't build it, did they?
They didn't, no.
Should they have done? Was it a mistake that they didn't? Is that the thing the South needs?
I guess, I mean, in the short term, would have created more jobs, but there would be just that. What happened to that?
I don't know what happened to it, but I know it takes ages for them to build new highways. So there are some highways they wanted to create, motorways they wanted to create to better connect the south. And they're still there, like half made, half not ready yet.
Yeah, so. For example, it takes like 6 hours for going to from Palermo to Catania. So maybe they should have concentrated on improving the infrastructure within Sicily rather than connecting Sicily to the rest.
It takes 6 hours to get across Sicily.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay, that's not great. Okay.
That's not.
And does national governments feel any need to kind of improve the infrastructure in the south, or is this just...
you have the stereotypes that just focus on the north, so the fast trains are mostly in the north rather than the south. Yeah. They stop at...
Naples. There's one in Naples, but after
that's
that...
That's it. After that, there is no more trains.
Oh, that's very sad.
Well, there are trains, but just not the fast one. Yeah. And also it's funny because if you think about the south of Italy, so it splits... And so you got routes from the north that go down to Naples and then towards Sicily, and then you got routes from the north that go on the other coast, but it's really hard to get from one coast to the other.
Do you have to go back up to Naples and down again?
I just think it takes really long.
Sure. Okay, let's wrap up with some talking about some stereotypes. In the notes you guys sent over to me first, there is the question, are Southerners lazy? So, Eleanor, are Southerners lazy?
Based on
Gabriele's experience and all my friends, no, I wouldn't say that. Having said that, most of the Southerners that move to Northern Italy are the highly educated, so I can only talk for them. I don't really know about the rest.
But I guess what I'm asking is, like, is that how... Northerners sometimes see Southerners, is that?
I think... I think that
don't
was...
Don't worry about history. Answer honestly.
I think that was the perception, at least in the beginning, because of all of this idea of, the Southerners steals our taxes. But I think, as I said, with the change in the Northern League to becoming a league, there has been a shift towards who is the enemy now in Italy.
Okay, is there a kind of another stereotype in the other way around? What have Southerners historically thought of the Northerners?
They work too hard and never go to the seaside.
No, we go to the seaside, we come to your seaside.
But there's no kind of like, those Northerners are just kind of like in a metropolitan snob, as they're selfish. There's nothing like that.
A little bit of that.
A bit of that, yeah. The kind of stuff they just focus on work, on their career. They look down on people from the south. They call us terroni, this kind of stuff, which means... What does terroni mean?
I think people that work with the land?
Yes.
Something like that? Yeah.
Okay, just to finally wrap up, let's do like... Just instant reaction. I will name a city. Just say the first thing about it that comes into your head. Like, just tell me what the city means to you. Okay, let's do Milan.
Grey, definitely grey, because of the architecture and also the weather, but very efficient and very chaotic, I think.
Okay.
Football.
Okay. Rome.
Way more chaotic than Milan, even if I just use the same word. Eclectic, hectic, messy, yeah.
A living museum.
Rome is weird like that, actually. Yeah. Just turn the corner and there's the Colosseum or something.
Yeah.
And also, like, they've not been able to build a proper underground railway.
Because
every time someone digs a hole, they find some hole. Okay. What about Turin?
Fiat? Car manufacturer? Yeah.
Juventus?
Yeah.
Football is
exactly.
Naples?
Pizza.
Oh.
Well, excellent. that's from there.
Nothing.
Baba.
Yeah, it's food.
Okay, last one, let's do Florence.
It's beautiful. We've got the best museums in the country, I think.
Is Florence like the cultural heart of the...
Together with Rome and Venice and a lot of others.
Yeah, you're not short of them, really. Yeah. Anyway, thank you very much for doing that.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.